Hey guys, you're listening to the Gen Pop Podcast with me, your host, Larry Doyle. Where each week, I'm going to bring in friends, guests, and experts to help enhance your health, fitness, and wellness journeys. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversations. So it's my absolute pleasure to bring on Brian today onto the podcast. Brian, I haven't said your surname, so I'm going to let you get the compulsories out of the way first. Hit the people with your surname, please, Brian.
Yeah, my name is Brian O'Hengisa, and that is always the first question, either just before a podcast starts or like in the initial interchange.
So now that we've got that out of the way, Brian's a great personal friend of mine and someone who, you know, we've got so much time for, and you'll see us sharing his stuff on socials all the time and whatnot as well too. But from that side, he's a great professional friend, and he's somebody that I really wanted to get onto the podcast to be able to talk about the in-depth side of nutrition and so many, many other things. But today we're going to dive into a lot of the basics and kind of hit the first points first and elaborate on those. But before we get into that, Brian, introduce yourself, tell the people who you are, what you do, and who you do it with.
Yeah, sure thing, Larry. Thank you for having me on, of course. Pleasure to be here. So I am a university qualified nutritionist. I got my nutrition degree out of University College Dublin. After that, I went on and did some of the, well, both of the coaching courses with Precision Nutrition. So they're nutrition based and also the actual application of, say, the nutrition science to get results with people. And I've been coaching out of the Fit Clinic, which is an online coaching consultancy service. So we work on a one-to-one basis with a wide range of clients. You know, it's nutrition and lifestyle coaching. They'll do training programming or anything like that. So it's a wide range of people I work with. You know, like this is the Gen Pop podcast of general population people, absolutely, and athletes as well. Myself personally, I work with a lot of people with kind of disordered eating behaviors, people who need help with their kind of food psychology and behaviors around that. We also work with a lot of people with, say, digestive issues, different hormonal conditions, PCOS, that sort of thing. So really, really wide range of things where nutrition and lifestyle factors can play a role.
Yeah, and it's been a massive help. And like it's something that we do so often, we'll refer people out just once it goes past our scope of practice within the personal training realm as well. And that's something that I guess I want to touch on straight away from that perspective with it, Brian, that what is the difference between, you know, your wholesale nutrition or your PT and your nutritionist? What's the actual differences there from a professional perspective?
Yeah, I mean, so I should say that, you know, to be a nutritionist is not a protected title in Ireland anyway. So there can be a lot of what I call cereal box nutritionists where, you know, the cert or whatever it is comes in your Rice Krispies or whatever it is. But, you know, if someone is, say, university accredited, you know, they can be a member of the Association for Nutrition. You basically can trust to some extent that that person has been vetted and has had to undergo has to have learned their stuff, prove that they can get this degree or certificate or whatever it is through examination and appraisal of those exams. So it's a more rigorous training process, I suppose. And that's not to say that a lot of PTs aren't quite good with their nutrition guidelines. It's obviously a big part of a PT's job. Well, these days it seems it is anyway. Probably, you know, a long time ago it wasn't the case. They probably stuck to training. But, you know, nutrition plays an important part. So it's obviously prudent to be talking about that if you are a PT. But you obviously need to make sure that you're information is solid and your sources for the information are solid. And yeah, unless you're going to go and do a course of some sort, like you're probably not going to put the same amount of hours in terms of learning about this stuff.
And I guess that's, you know, you're really comparing people who have spent years in the actual trenches of learning versus people who have spent days or weekends in that as well too. And there's a massive difference that we'll see. And, you know, that's why we're so confident in kind of referring out towards the likes of yourselves and other professionals that, you know, need to take over from a PT just when it doesn't suit and when it doesn't go into that lane. But I guess when we could go down that whole different rabbit hole of the professionalism and whatever with it. But what I'm really wanting to talk about today, Brian, is, you know, the main topic I want to start off with is what is nutrition and why we should pay attention to it as opposed to hit your macros, hit your protein and that's it. This is the kind of the sound bites that we're hearing back all the time. It's like, you know, hit your protein and you're golden and just hit your macro target total for the week and you're good and everything happens. But if we're looking at it from, I guess, a very general baseline level, what is nutrition?
Yeah, well, nutrition is utilizing food components and foods themselves to provide you with the both the macro and the nutrients that you need to support good health and vitality, I suppose. Because, you know, that's what it, when you look at the role of, you know, micronutrients and also macronutrients, like both of these have enormous roles in all of our bodily processes. Yeah, you know, every organ system, every cell is affected by nutrition in some way. And while looking at macros and just hitting calories and say protein, like they're not bad suggestions, especially when it comes to changing body composition, but you know, it's not all about changing body composition. There's so much more to it than that. So with nutrition, you're looking at, you know, how can foods support me for my health, for my performance, beyond just looking at that bare bones, like, oh, energy, or, you know, overall calorie intake gives me energy, and protein makes sure that I can have enough muscle mass or build more muscle mass. Like they're all fine, they're all important, but there's so much more to it than that. You know, nearly every cell in your body that, or nearly everything in your body that's not made of water, is going to be made of a protein to some extent. So that just goes to show the importance of protein in that context. Like, so it's always just talked about, okay, yeah, protein is filling, and you know, protein is helps with muscle recovery, but you know, you need it to make nearly everything, like all your skin, your hair, your nails, cells on the inside, you know, DNA, all that stuff is going to be affected by, you know, amino acid intake. And that kind of premise goes for, you know, every set of macronutrients. And then within those foods that you're going to be eating, there's going to be micronutrients as well, vitamins and minerals, which are mostly, you know, catalysts for biological processes in the body that are super, super important. And, you know, there's a plethora of nutrition research in terms of how nutrition interacts with disease states, in terms of, you know, preventing that and just keeping people healthy.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, massively overlooked section, I think, with nutrition and, you know, people just going down the route of, well, if it fits your macros. And like where flexible dieting, and I'm not trying to preach from the altar here and say like everyone needs to eat, you know, mackerel and broccoli and have this perfectly amino acid split profile with all their foods and all their minerals and nutrients from that perspective with it. But there has to be obviously an element of adherence and enjoyment to that. But from that perspective of, I guess, optimizing health, which is in turn going to optimize composition from that, you know, downstream effect from that too, it's often the most overlooked part. So I guess if we were to look at, let's not even say optimizing health, but just increasing health from the perspective of digging in with nutrition, where would you start and kind of what would you look for from the initial outset with, let's say, a new client?
Yeah, so obviously you need to get an assessment of where the client is at starting out, because I could have one idea of like, you know, what is the optimal diet for health. But if that's a million miles away from where they currently are, then I'm not going to expect them to just make that leap. So we're going to look at what's most important, let's say. And you know this yourself, and this is just going into like behavior change. So I'm not going to go there now. But basically, you want to look at the quality of someone's food, and by the quality, I mean, you know, is it mostly what we would call, like, quote unquote, whole foods, the typical things that you think of as being healthy? Like, there's a lot of issues with, like, giving food labels, and, you know, I could say less processed foods, but then, you know, processed foods, there's nothing wrong with them, because technically nearly all the foods we are processed to some degree. So it started to be referred to as ultra processed foods, which are the things you typically think of that are not very nutrient dense. So, you know, that's your, I don't like to say junk food, but everyone will know what I mean to an extent when I say junk food. So we want to look at the, you know, how much of someone's diet is made up of the whole foods versus less nutritious stuff, because the whole foods are going to be where you find more nutrients and more just healthful support. And it's a case of trying to start to transition to have that look like most of their diet. So it's things like, you know, good quality protein sources. You look at fat sources coming from, again, whole foods. And, you know, is the carbohydrate selection, is that a lot of fruits and vegetables, are the carbohydrates selected higher in fiber than not? And are they, say, minimally processed, or processed in such a way that doesn't mean adding a lot of salt or sugar or extra fat to them?
Yeah, and that's, again, it's massive to look at it from that perspective with it too. And I guess when, if you're looking for, when you're saying like food quality and like quality proteins, etc., what are you looking for in that nutritional scope that you're looking at with the new client? What are you actually looking for with nutrient quality or the protein quality specifically?
Yeah, so for protein quality, you know, for most people, not consuming, say, a huge amount of their protein from, say, cured meats, for example. So like bacons and sausages and salamis and that sort of stuff, because they are more processed. They have more things added to them that may not be as beneficial for health. So you're looking at generally like lean proteins. So, you know, lean beef, lean poultry, fish is excellent. And like in the, you know, their most natural state almost. So stuff that's like, you know, less breaded stuff, because that adds extra, you know, calories, fat, carbohydrates, that you may not want depending on the context of your diet. But shifting people towards more this, you know, like whole food approach, you know, within protein, it's like you need to look at, are they eating any oily fish? Because that provides omega-3s, and they are super important for, you know, the brain health and cardiovascular health. And that brings us into a discussion about, like, you know, fat quality, because it's not just about hitting the numbers. You know, it's not just about saying, okay, these are my fat or these are my protein targets. It doesn't matter how I hit them. For health purposes, it definitely does. And yeah, those are the kind of things we're looking for. The foods that you have to do less to them to, you know, before you're ready to consume them, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, like, it's, we could go down that whole route with that as well about the whole even preparation. It's going to potentially change or alter that too. But I guess when you're looking at the raw form that food comes from and how it's made into to what is presented on the plate, I guess is huge too. So then when we go down that discussion of the fats, then I guess if we go through this with the fat and carbohydrate too, where we're here. So someone goes in to look for fat, then they start looking at, oh, there's now fat is broken down into saturated and polyunsaturated, and there's omega 369s, and there's so many different names and labels and stuff. What should they really be looking for that baseline of kind of hitting quality nutrition from that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of boxes you want to take in that context. So I already mentioned omega-3 fatty acids, and they're specifically the marine omega-3 fatty acids. So they come from the sea, be it from algae, which is, you know, that's going to come in a supplemental form, or does it actually come from the fish? Or obviously you can get fish oil. If, like, a lot of people, like, you don't consume, a lot of people don't consume fatty fish, which would be salmon, mackerel, sardines, kippers, or herring, or anchovies. So a lot of people won't eat those on a regular basis. They'll have to use an omega-3 fish oil or krill oil or algae oil supplement. But it is, they're the most important fats, let's say, without being absolutist about nutrition, which is, you know, definitely not something that I should do here.
We walk down that route.
but to give people something to go away with, like they are super important. So you need to have that box ticked. And then after that, it's hard to go wrong when you're looking at consuming, you know, a large percentage of your fat from plant sources, and specifically with those plant sources, things like olives and olive oil products are excellent because they're rich in polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats. Avocados, the same. Nuts and seeds, very, very good. And these are generally going to give you the best fats when you're looking at a health perspective. And then not over-consuming saturated fats. So, you know, not putting butter in your coffee just to make it bulletproof. You know, excess consumption of saturated fat, probably not good for you for heart health. So you want to have most of your fat sources coming from those foods that that I just mentioned. And, you know, saturated fat is going to come from, say, like I said, butter, cream. It's, you know, it's present in dairy fat, in all sorts of dairy fat, but it seems that like cheese and milk and yogurt don't have the same sort of negative effect on cardiovascular health as, say, butter and cream do, if you were to consume too much of those. And then, you know, you're going to get a lot of fats in meat, potentially. So, you know, beef, lamb, you know, bacon, sausage, that sort of thing. So generally, a lot of that will be saturated fat. And it's really better to get the majority of your fat intake from those other sources that I mentioned. That they're mostly plant sources and marine omega-3s, especially.
Yeah, and with, I guess, I don't know which gets demonized more. Maybe you might have an opinion on it as well. Is it fat or carbohydrates? But, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, negativity that's around both of those. But if you were to even look at it without going too deep, but from a hormonal perspective, where we often see a lot of females, when they're dieting, they'll pull fats right out of their diet. They'll either go to one extreme. It's either pull carbs right out or pull fats right out. But the negative implications then from reducing fat intake on hormones, that's going to be quite rampant, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you get too low on fat intake, you need fats to synthesize a lot of hormones, especially you need cholesterol and fats to synthesize, say, sex hormones, which are important for men and women, absolutely. And it's, I mean, like a lower threshold would probably be about 30 grams a day, that you don't want to go below that for any sort of long period of time. And like, I mean, me and you know that is very low when it comes to fat intake. And then, you know, if you are going to those kind of lower levels of fat intake, then it just becomes more important to consider the actual sources of those fats, because, you know, you need to make sure that you are getting those nutrients that you need. So, you know, if someone's on 30 grams of fat a day, at that lower, absolutely lower limit, and they're not consuming any omega-3s, like that is a big gaping hole in their nutrition, and their health, like, especially long-term. Like, one of the things about this is, you know, a lot of the health outcomes when you're looking at nutrition depend on like exposure to nutrients over time, or exposure to different metabolites in the body over time. So it's not like, you know, you eat a load of oily fish today and you notice the difference tomorrow, which is one of the problems, I suppose, that we have in trying to get people on board with this sort of stuff. It's like, oh, well, I'm getting leaner here. This is great. I feel better, or I'm happy enough. But it's like, you know, when you're starting to get to months down the line, or even years down the line, if you're neglecting your nutrient intake, that's when you're going to start to run into problems. So you need to like address that like on a now basis, and make sure those boxes are ticked.
And I guess from the educational perspective, then this is where, you know, the true professional would come into it from your perspective with it, because if you're asking someone to address nutrient quality and, you know, especially addressing all these different factors, that comes with higher price tag generally with the types of food that you're going to be consuming then as well, as opposed to those cheaper cuts of meat or those cheaper sources of fat or whatever it may be. So then you're creating another, I guess, conflict, which is going to have to be resolved by giving that level of education as opposed to, well, just hit your macros or just hit your calories from that side. So this is where I guess it's vitally important to have that education background or have that support from someone in the know to be able to get that level of buy-in to create the increased health benefits that we're really looking for from that. So you mentioned about the baseline for fats being like a minimum threshold of like 30 grams a day. With protein then as well, would you have something similar as kind of a minimum base threshold for health? Because again, the massive positive impacts from protein that we know about, but what is a minimum baseline or threshold you would expect or look for someone to hit?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, if you were to look up a lot of these nutrient requirements, you know, the dietary reference values or RDAs, as they used to be known here and then still are known as that in the likes of America and stuff, like a lot of those are set at just at a bare minimum. It's like, okay, you know, this is your vitamin D or vitamin C RDA, even Larry, this is just, you know, consume this much and you're not going to get scurvy, which is fantastic. But, you know, just hitting enough to not get scurvy is probably not going to have you thriving, so to speak. So for protein, the kind of minimum is set quite low at like, you know, 50, 60 grams a day. So I would much sooner have people eating a lot more than that. So we usually work it out by body weight. So I like practically all my clients to be consuming at least 1.5 grams of protein per kilo of their body weight. Some people down at maybe the 1.2 level, if they're not super active, like they're not training that much, they don't need as much protein potentially. Also, if someone is quite overweight and carrying a lot of excess body fat, you know, their body weight is going to be higher, which can skew that protein recommendation. So for them, a 1.2 grams per kilo might be better. And then you can go all the way up to about 2 or 2.5 grams per kilogram of body weight. But I usually have most people between that 1.5 and 2 grams per kilogram of body weight per day. And that's where I like to see people, you know, if they're training a lot or they have, you know, muscle gain goals or they need to manage their appetite, sure, we can look at higher ends of protein. But I think as a bare minimum, everyone should be in around that 1.2 to 1.5 gram per kg mark at least.
That's awesome. And I guess from your experience, I've seen it with people when they go from coming to you with, let's say, 30, 40, 50 grams of a daily protein intake, what differences do you see when all of a sudden they almost treble their intake to 120 to 150 grams of intake? What do you see reported back kind of short and long term from that?
Yeah, they get pretty instantaneous benefits in terms of their like their energy levels. They just feel better because they're, you know, their body is being better maintained, to put it in kind of cruder terms, but to try and keep it simple. So they tend to have better energy levels, and if they are exercising or doing some sort of physical training, like their recovery is just so much better. They see improvements in their performance, but like it's really like real basic stuff as well that you know, might not consider. But it's like, you know, their quality of their hair improves, their fingernails improves, you know, their skin looks better. They just feel that good bit better overall. Their energy levels are more stable as well as just being higher, and you know they're more kind of satisfied throughout the day. You see reduced cravings, you kind of see a spontaneous reduction in the consumption of, you know, higher sugar, higher fat, salt foods, the kind of quote unquote junk foods we talked about earlier. So you see a big, beneficial swing in that. And, you know, and then for certain populations that may exclude certain protein food groups. So, you know, vegetarians or vegans who may not be eating as high quality protein sources, then you have to look at, you know, helping them get enough of the specific amino acids that are within the protein to make sure that they're going to thrive and be healthy.
Yeah, that's massive, because again, we can look at that and really see the benefits and values, and you get so much immediate buy-in from the individual once they start to get to that level. But I guess it can be daunting to take that first step to almost like triple your intake of a certain macronutrient as well. But, and that's the next thing, and kind of the last thing we want to go on to is like, when someone is told to go on to a calorie deficit, it's like, hit your targets, that's it. But like, you know, they're drop the calories down and you can get out to 700-800 calories and drop off tons of fat. But with these calorie deficits, often what we see coming along with that is a nutrient deficit as well. And would you just talk, you know, briefly on that as well too, about what you might see, or the impacts or the negative impacts from, you know, not being in a nutrient surplus, even while being in a calorie deficit?
Yeah. So like, as a general rule, if calories are going to go down, you need to be more aware of your food choices to make sure you're getting enough nutrition. Because obviously it's easy enough for someone to just kind of cruise along and casually hit their targets if they're eating like 3,000 calories a day. But if you have someone down at 1,500, like every calorie counts, so to speak, in terms of what it can provide in terms of nutrition for you. So if you're not careful, or you're not aware of this, if you know, being in a big or small calorie deficit, like a lot of people are kind of running into at least some sort of nutrient deficiency, like micronutrient deficiency, vitamins and minerals, just as a baseline, you know, if their diet quality is lower, or it's not varied enough to hit on different foods that are going to provide a lot of nutrients. So like a good example for this is, fruits and vegetables, there are different colors, which generally indicates there's different nutrients in them. So, you know, if you're eating like tons of, say, you know, carrots and parsnips and peppers and beetroots and things like that, say, you know, you eat tons of those and you're eating tons of vegetables, like that's fantastic. But if you're not eating any greenery, you're going to miss out on a certain spectrum of nutrients. So like, you know, your vitamin K intake might be kind of low, which is important. Like most micronutrients are important for many, many things in the body. It's really just one thing that something does. So your vitamin K might be low. Your folate intake might be low. That's especially important for women, especially of childbearing age. Those sort of considerations come into it. You can use a multivitamin or something to try and cover those bases, but it's like looking at food selection will get you a lot of the way there. And then the difference between using food versus supplements, say, is that there's going to be a lot of things in the food that we just don't know about that are going to contribute in some healthful way. There's plenty of compounds in fruits and vegetables and other plant foods that are unique to those plant foods that they're not a specific vitamin or a mineral as such. They're just a phytochemical, just a plant compound that can infer some benefits. And as time goes on, we're learning more and more and more about those and the benefits they have.
It's just so good to confirm that and kind of see where, you know, your mind is going at with nutrition from that perspective, as opposed to just, you know, hit these bare minimums and that's going to get us by so we can just survive, as opposed to actually thrive. And I guess that goes out the window with a lot of people's mindset when they go into dieting phases, that, you know, let's just get through this and survive it if we can, as opposed to actually coming out the other side and, you know, being a better functioning human. Calorie deficit should, you know, it should take away from your body fat, but it shouldn't actually take away from your quality of health as well too. Something that we're wanting to look into with all this, we're only scratching the surface in terms of what we can really get into here. And I'm really conscious of keeping it that way for, you know, our first conversation, because we're going to have many, many more conversations on the podcast with you, Brian, about so many different topics, because you can deliver so much value and you've got so much information that's going to be immediately useful to so many people. But if we were to come back and kind of wrap all this up in terms of nutrition, we want to look at, you know, hitting quality proteins, quality fat sources, having wide varied nutrient intake, making sure we're hitting baseline micronutrients along with our macronutrients. Is there anything else you would add to that as well too?
No, I think having that awareness of you know, food selection and food quality mattering. And like, I think both of us know that the suggestion of, you know, hit your calories, hit your protein, or just hit your macros, like that's helpful to a lot of people, depending where they're at in terms of their nutritional knowledge, because it can be liberating in a way for someone to actually learn, oh, okay, it is calories that is the main driver if I want to lose some weight. So I don't have to go on this super strict diet where I can't eat any kind of fun foods that I like. That's, you know, just the portions that matter rather than the foods. Like, that's incredibly important for people to get as well. So I understand the kind of really enthusiastic message where, okay, let's, you know, all you have to do is hit your calories. Like, that's literally it. If you can do that, you lose weight. And lo and behold, it happens. But we can't let it swing too far over to that side either. Like, we do need to remind people that food quality is important, especially if they want to be able to maintain this in the longer term and be healthy. And, you know, as we both agree, a healthy body will do what you want it to do much more easily. And you're going to protect yourself from, you know, disease and illness and you're down the line by making sure that your food quality is good for the most part. Again, this is trying to strike a balance between just hit your macros and that's it, and then the other side where it's like you have to only eat clean foods if you want to, you know, be healthy and make progress. So there's a balance to be struck.
It's that double-edged sword of, like, you need to get the initial buy-in from someone by obviously putting them on a deficit to create that, you know, positive reaction from them. But then that's kind of, I guess, the harsh calorie deficit is going to be the short term. And then, you know, for the long-term health approach, like hitting more of the nutrient-focused is going to be absolutely key. Cool. So I think we've got like so much here and so much value. And we were going to save so much more for the next day's conversation as well, too. But three things I want to actually ask you. What are your three favorite foods and why? We're going to wrap it up on this one from here.
Three favorite foods, like specific foods?
Yep. As specific as you want to be.
Okay.
Down to the brand.
I love a good steak. I'm not going to lie. So, generally a ribeye is my favorite. So, certainly a good steak or a good bit of beef is going to be in my top three. I want to pick a vegetable. I'm going to go with broccoli. So I love vegetables generally, right?
Typical nutritionist, picking the broccoli.
Yeah, it's like a lot of self-selection going on, right? Into the job. But broccoli, you know, as long as it's cooked properly and not just fucking boiled to death, and it's nicely seasoned. And yeah, I enjoy that. And then I'm going to say chocolate, because chocolate is just class, and I'm a major chocolate consumer.
Okay, so let's be specific on the percentage, like, because people call 60% dark chocolate, and I'm not friends with those people.
What's my favorite type of chocolate? So I've been eating a lot of green and blacks, 85% lately. But is that my favorite? I really like actually the Lindt sea salt and caramel. That dark chocolate, that's deadly.
Solid choice.
Actually, no, the green and black salted caramel, the tin bar, that one.
Solid choice. Yeah, solid choice. Right, Brian, we've had loads of fun with this, and we've gone into, I guess, the surface level, and we're going to start to peel off the layers of the onions as we go on with more conversations. But for now, I really appreciate you being on. But if you just want to tell people where they can find you so they can get more information from what they've heard so far.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, man. This was good crack, and I look forward to many more. If anyone wants to find out more about me or communicate with me, they can find my Instagram, which is Brian O'Hengisa. You'll get the spelling from the podcast title, I'm sure. And then if you want to find out more about the Fit Clinic, visit that on Instagram too. So that's the Fit Clinic, and also the Fit Clinic. .ie or the fitclinicnutrition.com, where you can find out more about our coaching services, the blog there, plenty of free info, and the same on the social media. So that's where people should go if they want to find out any more.
Awesome. And again, we will be having you back for so many more chats, and we'll go deeper and we'll start peeling off the layers of that nutritional onion as we go. But for now, Brian, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and till the next time, we'll chat soon.
Cheers, Larry. I'll talk to you soon.
A huge thank you to Brian from the Fit Clinic for joining us today and sharing his insights, his wisdom and knowledge on all things nutrition. We're going to dig in much deeper with some more episodes from Brian, and for sure he'll be back. But leave a comment, leave a review, and share any other insights that you may have found useful with us and on your social media channels. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to bringing you on a journey with the next episode.